Welcome to Life Quest Liberty, live in-depth conversations with today's top writers, editors, and spiritual leaders concerning religious freedom around the world. On today's broadcast, we'll examine local and international factors that may be impacting your right to worship and obey God as your conscience dictates. I'm your Life Quest Liberty host, Charles Mills. Last time on this program, Alan Reinach, director of the Seventh-day Adventist Church State Council, and I talked about the fact that we're soldiers in a global war, doing battle against those who would undermine our religious freedoms, and that includes our own country sometimes. Just where is this conflict taking us? According to recent news reports, it's taking us in some very dangerous directions, and that's the subject of our show today. Alan, what has caught your attention as of late, and why should we be interested?
You know, the American people, Charles, are very fickle in terms of what we pay attention to.
That's for sure.
And I want to give a little contrast here, because at the beginning of this year, the American people rose up at the command of our internet masters, and we soundly defeated bills in Congress that would restrict our freedom to steal lots of free entertainment, movies, television shows, music. We love our free stuff.
Long live America, yes.
Now, to be sure, there were flaws with the copyright protection bills and the piracy bills that were being proposed, and those flaws needed to be fixed. There's no question they were flawed. But I want to first of all, I want to applaud the American people for being able to care about something. And I think that this episode shows that if we will care about something, we can actually make a difference.
That's right.
So, you know, that's good as far as it goes. But I also think it's important what we care about.
Mm.
And by contrast, consider that Congress delivered to the president, who duly signed into law on the last day of last year, the National Defense Authorization Act, which is a huge bill with, you know, lots of provisions for continuing the military funding and what have you, and lots of things that are not controversial, but stuck in there was something that was extremely troubling and that got some press attention, not a lot, but very little outcry from the American people. And that was an authorization for the United States military to operate on American soil and to indefinitely detain American citizens or anyone else who have not committed a crime. They're not being charged with crimes. They're being indefinitely detained, as it were, locked up and the key thrown away on suspicion of being terrorists.
And who determines the suspicion? Are there laws that says, okay, you are suspicious if 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5?
They do.
They do. Just
somebody
on their own.
Somebody does.
Just, okay.
And there's, but you see, you know, look, the genius of our system is checks and balances.
Yes. Yes.
Is accountability. Is due process of law. There is no due process of law here. There is someone in authority determining that one of us is suspect, and so they lock us up and throw away the key.
And we have no recourse? We just have to fold our hands behind our backs and be handcuffed and led away simply because someone thinks that we are a terrorist?
Because we're dangerous, yes.
Mercy.
It remains to be seen whether this will be implemented and how, but remember, there has never been any power that has not been used and typically abused.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's couple this with a couple of other developments. Recently, last year, you know that we have been using drones.
Yes.
In the war on terrorism.
Yes.
And we have been seeking to use these drones to kill leaders of the terrorist groups. One of the leaders of an Al-Qaeda affiliate in Yemen was an American-born Muslim, Anwar al-Awlaki. and he was killed in a drone attack. Now, think about this for a minute. On the one hand, we are, as Americans, thankful that we are having some success in identifying and doing battle against these terrorists. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we killed an American citizen without any kind of due process, any kind of legal determination that they had acted in a criminal manner against our country.
Someone in the chain of command, in the military chain of command, decided that this guy was a person of interest and took this person out and had the authority to do so simply because he thought this. There's a movie that came out a number of years ago, Minority Report. Remember Tom Cruise, I think, was in this thing. And they went around arresting and throwing people in jail because of what they thought they're going to do, what they were thinking about doing. Does this sound familiar to you?
I hope Americans will go back and watch the movie again. There have been a number of movies that have been very, very troubling. But yes, I remember Minority Report very well. They had supposedly perfected the technology to determine what crime someone was going to do before they did it.
Yeah.
So they managed to eliminate most crimes. But of course, nothing's perfect, is it? And that was one of the premises of the movie, was that somebody had manipulated the system to get somebody. Now, nobody is saying that Anwar al-Awlaki was a good guy, okay? So let's be clear. It's the precedent that is set when we start killing American citizens. Now, let's couple that with another story. It was recently reported widely that drones are coming to a neighborhood near you.
Yes, that's true.
You saw that story, Charles.
Yes, I did.
So not only are we using drones to take out terrorists, but drones are now going to be used for various purposes, surveillance purposes, here in the United States.
Mercy.
Now, your usual host, for whom I'm substituting today, Lincoln Steed, has often discussed with me seeing a law professor who is very prominent from the D.C. area, Jonathan Turley, on C-SPAN, expressing his concern that drones would one day be committing attacks on American soil against alleged terrorists. That the same kinds of drone attacks that we've been using in Pakistan or in Yemen would be coming to American soil. Well, we don't know if that's going to happen for sure, but we do know that the drones are coming to a neighborhood near you. Now, let's couple that with yet another story, and this one about a 13-year-old kid in Tacoma, Washington, who last year, after the assassination of Osama bin Laden, wrote on his Facebook page his concerns about possible retaliation against the American president. Now, if I was one of his teachers, I would stand him up in front of the class and commend him for having a heart, for paying attention to what's going on in the world and caring enough and realizing that, yes, when America acts, and it was, Americans are very happy, of course, that we took down Osama bin Laden. But, yes, he was right about the risk of a retaliatory attack. Well, what happened was that his Facebook posting earned him a visit at his junior high school. He's an eighth grader. Earned him a visit from the Secret Service, investigating whether this 13-year-old kid was a security threat. So, let's start connecting the dots. And what I think our listeners need to understand is that your cell phone calls, your internet searches, your Twitters, your Facebook postings, it's all being sifted through the national security apparatus. And Big Brother is most definitely watching you, and not just with those nice cameras that we have everywhere at intersections and 7-Elevens and what have you, and banks, Big Brother is watching everywhere, everything you do.
Big Brother's going to say, well, Alan Reinach, don't you feel safer because I'm doing this? Don't you feel when you go to sleep at night that I'm on station, I'm watching out for you, you can sleep soundly because we're here taking good care of you?
Someone asked me, I was discussing at church one afternoon recently in a public meeting, this whole trade-off, this whole issue of freedom or security. And they raised a question that I hadn't thought about before. They said, can you have security without freedom?
Security without freedom.
Where that took my mind was to think about a number of nations that had very highly developed security apparatus without freedom. The one that most Americans would relate to probably is the Soviet Union.
Yes.
I actually thought first about Argentina under the junta, where literally tens of thousands of people were, quote, disappeared by the security forces, and other nations in Central and South America where this has happened in my lifetime. One of the articles I read reminded me that typically, those who are the first subjects of the abuses of power are elected officials, journalists, academics, students, those who have the intellectual capacity to object. In Cambodia, under the Khmer Rouge, anyone wearing glasses was killed. Because if you had glasses, you were thought to be a threat.
Yeah.
So can you have, you know, does the prospect of increased security that violates our freedom help me sleep better at night? No, it does not. I don't believe that you can trade freedom for security. And I'm with Ben Franklin. Remember wise old Ben. And there's a quote that's been often repeated of his since 9/11. But I don't know that most people know the context of it. Ben was, after all, a businessman before he was a politician, and he was from a very, you know, business-oriented community in Philadelphia, very thrifty, very conservative class of business people. And, of course, his colleagues there in Philadelphia were quite concerned that a revolution, a war, would disrupt. It would be bad for business. And, of course, for them, for the kind of business they were in, they were right.
Yes.
Ben Franklin's quip at that time, I think, was really with his fellow Philadelphians in mind. And he said, those who would trade eternal liberty for temporary security deserve neither.
And that just seems to be what we are so willing to do in this country right now.
We are certainly trading eternal liberty. We're trading it for security that we may think or hope is more than temporary.
Yeah. I mean, Alan, you travel a lot. You go through airports. You go through security. Wouldn't you rather have the security there, although it's a pain to go through all that and take your shoes off? Wouldn't you rather have that than have someone coming on board with a bomb on in your airplane?
Always fight the last battle. No, of course I don't want a bomb on the airplane. But, for example, maybe a year or so after 9/11, I'm getting on a plane and a teenage kid behind me has a racquetball racket he's carrying on the plane. Now, that may seem innocuous to most of our listeners, and surely it is innocuous. But let me explain my sort of twisted logic. You see, in my college years, I did a lot of prison ministry. And when you do prison ministry, you begin to learn what twisted people can do with unusual objects. And so I knew very well that for someone who was, you know, literally hell-bent on evil, a racquetball racket had enormous potential to become not one, but a variety of deadly weapons, yes, including a variety of what they call shanks, you know, knives, as well as the string, which could easily be used to strangle.
Yes.
So, granted that there may be some things that the security process will screen out that are dangerous, but you cannot build locks that are impenetrable. So it doesn't matter how much security you build. Those who are intent on breaking them will break them.
They'll find a way.
That's correct.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you want to trace this back,
yeah,
you know, let's make this point. The wave of airplane hijackings began in the 70s and continued in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Ronald Reagan famously said publicly, "We do not negotiate with terrorists," which was the right thing to say. The problem is, in every single case, the terrorists were negotiated with. And as a result, the attacks continued.
I remember those days, and I remember thinking that, what is the answer? So if we had not negotiated, are you saying that if we had not negotiated with the terrorists and they had simply sat out there and no one showed up, they would have stopped hijacking airplanes?
We don't know the answer to hypotheticals, do we? Can I say with a certainty that if we had stuck to our guns, the attacks would have stopped? No, of course I can't. But as a matter of human nature, if you're achieving positive results by hijacking, you're going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And if hijacking is not achieving those results, then you're going to figure out something else to do.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. If we weren't negotiating with them and we were storming the planes and killing the hijackers and suffering the loss, mm-hmm, which we would have, mm-hmm, then at some point they probably would have stopped the hijackings and started something else.
Well, what stopped the hijackings? They did go away. You don't hear about them very much. What do you think stopped them?
That's a fair question. I'm honestly not entirely sure.
Yeah.
But there were far too many.
Yeah. I think that just they fell out of favor. I mean, they no longer were the way of getting the attention, no longer the way of getting out before the people what you wanted to say. They found other ways, like, oh, I don't know, flying airplanes into buildings. President Theodore Roosevelt once wrote in a letter to a friend, "To discriminate against a thoroughly upright citizen because he belongs to some particular church, or because, like Abraham Lincoln, he has not avowed his allegiance to any church, is an outrage against the liberty of conscience, which is the foundation of American life." A message from your friends at www.libertymagazine.org. Alan Reinach is the director of the Seventh-day Adventist Church State Council.
Let's get back to where we're taking this conversation, which is really the importance of the American people caring,
yes,
about our own liberty and being willing to speak up. Because where we started was, we care more about our right, so to speak, to steal free stuff online than we do about the loss of our liberty.
And that line of thinking has now pilotless airplanes circling over our homes. That's where that led to.
Correct. So now we have, you know, look, We live in a society now that is a national security state, and all of our speech and activities are being monitored.
Yes, yes.
Big Brother is definitely watching, which inevitably has a chilling effect on political dissent.
And a shiver just went down my backbone, because the effect it can have on religious liberty is immense, Alan.
We not only expect, but I think most Americans would support FBI monitoring of the activities of the mosques in America, so that we make sure that they don't become centers of terrorist recruitment.
That's right. That's right.
Well, you know, we had a similar situation back in the 1980s when we had refugees from violence in Central America, and we had a sanctuary movement among churches here in the Southwest, and we had the FBI monitoring churches. So if you are happy, listener, that your local mosque is being monitored by the FBI, would you be equally happy to have the FBI sitting, taking down license plates of everyone coming to your church this weekend? Would you be equally happy with the newly baptized member of your congregation being a plant of the FBI? Sent there to infiltrate and to monitor. And let's not forget that, you know, in the good old days of the 1960s and the anti-war movement and the Civil Rights Act, the Civil Rights Movement, not only was the FBI infiltrating and monitoring these organizations, but they were trying to destroy them by being the ones to incite to violence so that they could get the leaders arrested. And that program was shut down after the scandals of Watergate and investigations by the Church Commission in the mid-70s. But we're going back to, yes, you know, to those sorts of days where, you know, the national security state is monitoring religion.
We've been here before. I mean, if you look back on American history, just go in our own history, you will find a real tight leash that the government placed on, or the people placed on, religions of our newly formed America. Didn't we really make sure that that those who went to church went to the right church and not the wrong church? Didn't we have a lot of issues in inter-religious organizations as we became a nation?
There were certainly restrictions in colonial days.
Yes.
For example, in Virginia, you know, Madison and Jefferson's concepts of religious freedom were shaped in part by rules that restricted, for example, the Baptist preachers of the day were itinerant preachers.
Yeah.
And you had to have a license in order to preach, and the license typically would restrict you to a particular parish, a community, which didn't really fit well if you were a circuit-riding preacher. And so I know Madison listened to the Baptists preaching from behind bars in the local jail. And that really shaped his views of religious freedom, that the state should not be licensing, that people don't earn the right, they don't get a right to preach given by the state.
Yeah.
If they're going to preach, they're going to preach. That's part of religious freedom.
Yeah.
So, yes, there were a number of laws, different kinds of restrictions in different ones of the colonies, whether it had to do with taxation to support the church and everyone being taxed even if you weren't part of that church, or these kinds of restrictions on who has a license to preach. There were various types of laws in different places. And these really went by the wayside both before, during, and after the constitutional period.
But you're saying that today it's different in that we are having our personal freedoms intruded on?
Yes. Privacy is becoming virtually non-existent.
Yeah, yeah. And that privacy, what we are, also includes how we worship and how we believe and what we believe and what we want to say and where we want to say it. So you can't separate who you are from what you believe. if you are having your privacy, which includes all of you, infringed upon, that means by default you're having your belief system, your religion, your desire to worship God as you see fit and to act in the way you want to act in the name of God, that is also being infringed upon. That's what I hear you saying.
No right is an island.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a law review article by that title. I published a piece in Liberty Magazine by that title. No right is an island. Mm. It's not an accident of history that the First Amendment of our Constitution protects freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and freedom of assembly. And by the way, in the heyday of the Simpsons era, I would visit high schools, and I would ask high school students to name members of the Simpsons family. And they could name quite a few of them. And then I would ask them to name rights protected by the First Amendment. They didn't do so well. So, you know, and doesn't this come back to where we opened the show?
Yeah.
You know, we're more interested in protecting our entertainment and our right to free entertainment than we are in the First Amendment. And maybe tragically, that's a commentary on the sad state of our politics, where we have so little respect for the political process, for the integrity of our politicians, for their ability to do anything meaningful, that we have forfeited our political liberties. We don't care about free speech because it doesn't matter. We don't care about freedom of the press. The press is just feeding us, you know, regurgitated, yes, you know, nonsense approved by their corporate masters.
Yeah. Well, the take-home message today, put it in one sentence for us as we close our program, Alan Reinach. What are you saying?
Use your liberties or lose them. If you do nothing, if you continue to do nothing, you will continue to lose your freedoms. Freedom requires maintenance.
All right, boy. Those are words we need to hear, especially in this day and time. Alan Reinach is the director of the Seventh-day Adventist Church State Council. Alan, thank you so much for being with us today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure as always, Charles.
And listener, good stuff here. And you can listen to these programs again if you want at www.libertymagazine.org. You can podcast these programs and listen to them. I recommend that you do so. Until next time, this is Charles Mills along with Alan Reinach, suggesting that you rest in the freedom of God's love. Goodbye, everyone. You've been listening to Life Quest Liberty. To further explore the issues discussed on today's program, visit www.libertymagazine.org. Join us again next week at this same time as we examine more of the threats and challenges facing your religious freedom. May God keep the flames of religious freedom burning in your heart today.